I'm John Master, to Africa, to Sierra Leone, a fabled land, the product of the British Empire once upon a time, and now profoundly troubled with a president who will not leave, Biya is his name, and a governance that has collapsed except for one man, a caudillo called in South America, a strongman, Biya. What he wants and where we're going next, I welcome Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs to comment.
Well, what he wanted was in late June of this year, he just wanted to be re-elected as president, but he failed to control the election process, which he thought he could just coerce into supporting him. When it didn't, he basically tried some transparent moves to suppress the opposition. He started killing people and the like, and you had a situation where nobody accepted the election results. All of the foreign observers said it wasn't free, fair, and transparent. And basically, he was left with a population which did not believe he was the legitimate president of the country. And so there was a massive ongoing unrest and insurrection. At one stage, they were looking at a negotiated settlement with the local opposition parties, but the parties said, "Well, you've got to release or charge with criminal offences those politicians and figures, opposition figures who you've arrested." Well, the reality was that President Biya and his people had actually killed hundreds and hundreds of these people, so he couldn't release them. So he staged what was we saw in the last few weeks as reported as a coup attempt against the government, in which some mysterious armed forces attacked the major political prison, the Pademba Road prison in Freetown, and released all the prisoners, thousands of them, many of whom have voluntarily returned to their cells, strange enough. But by this mechanism, saying that this was a coup attempt, President Biya could say, well, all of those people who you were asking about were released in the Pademba Road a prison break, and so we don't know where they are, not our problem. But the reality was that this was staged to cover that up. But then it's become used, this coup attempt, as a means to suppress the entire population of people who may or may not be opposed to President Biya, who's a member of the very large Mende community of people. And the Mende comprise about 31% of the Sierra Leonean population. So what we're seeing emerging is this kind of ethnic war in which the Mende government is protecting itself against the non-Mende remainder of the population. And there are people being killed progressively throughout the situation. And now we have ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, which flew a delegation in recently to meet with Biya, and he'd actually gone off to Ghana at the time. But the ECOWAS have decided to reinstate their ECOMOG force, which is the ECOWAS Military Observer Group. And that was the military force from a number of other West African countries, which went into Liberia at one stage to finished the civil war off there and closed and end that fighting, and then went in to suppress the Sierra Leonean civil war a couple of decades ago. So they're going in again. We don't know what sort of access they'll have or whether any of the big ECOWAS powers like Nigeria or Ghana will be prepared to put in substantial forces. We saw that when ECOWAS threatened the Niger coup leaders a few months ago with a military invasion by an ECOMOG force. The junta in Niamey, Niger, just laughed at it because they knew they couldn't get them across hostile territory into Niger. And it may be that the ECOWAS forces combined are not ready to tackle this. So essentially, Biya is trying to consolidate power as fast as he can, suppress all opposition. He will be an isolated hermit kingdom, much like North Korea, the way things are going. But he will be in control, and we'll see where it goes from there. But there is the risk, and it's been expressed to me several times by Sierra Leoneans, including today, that they fear another Rwanda. Now, the population of Sierra Leone is nothing was nothing like as large as the population of Rwanda. But they're talking about the ethnic violence which occurred in Rwanda, where anything up to 5 or 6 million people actually were killed and many more displaced. So the Sierra Leoneans do fear that they're getting into an indiscriminate ethnic war in which they will all be forced to take sides, whereas they had until now been relatively well blended as a society. And now what we've seen is Biko has arrested the former president, Karoma, and he was a very moderate and very successful president of Sierra Leone, but he was, of course, not of the same party as Biko. And there's some suggestion by Sierra Leoneans that Biko is basically embarrassed by the fact that Karoma was such a successful president and Biko merely ushered in poverty and violence. So now Karoma has been arrested as being one of the sponsors of the November coup attempt, which was, as you know, a fake coup, just like the one that President Erdogan in Turkey staged in August 2016 against a coup against his government, which he used to flush out his adversaries and then kill them off. And this is what Biko is doing as well. But it's chaos in Freetown at the
Gregory,
moment.
You report that a journalist, Stephen Douglas Lett, 60 years old, byline Stephen Douglas, was found, his body was found near a police station. This is late November. Is that under investigation by the Canadian authorities? He's a Canadian national. Does this suggest that Europeans are at risk in Freetown?
Oh, yes. I think there's the military, the commander and the police under Biko are fairly ruthless. If you're not on their side, then they don't care. They don't see that there are going to be any ramifications which are going to affect them. Yes, I suspect that there will be some protests from the Canadians about the fate of Stephen Douglas. He was also close to the Globe and Mail, the national newspaper in Canada, in Toronto. So that's not going to go away anytime soon. It's going to be very, very difficult. The U.S. And the British have maintained their presence, diplomatic presence in Freetown, but they are not being coerced by Biko into going along and accepting his government. But Biko also sees what's happened with the Niger coup, for example, as well as Burkina Faso and Mali. In Niger, when the ECOWAS threatened to militarily take down the junta, now the ECOWAS has said, oh, well, we'll recognize your right to a transitional government as long as you promise to put civilian elected government back in within 2 or 3 years or something. So basically, the junta in the army seems to have got away with its move to evict the civilian government and the French government from Niger. And Biko probably thinks, well, if he hangs on long enough, he'll get away with it too.
Ethiopia, Gregory, we've watched that civil war tumble this last year. We have a Reuters headline talking about Fitch downgrading Ethiopian bonds. Is there any suggestion that Addis Ababa is stabilizing, given that it's conducting one or two conflicts at the same time?
It's got the one major conflict at this stage in which the National Defense Force is being employed alongside the Oromo Liberation Front in trying to suppress the Amhara region and the Afar region. This has caused Amhara people to build their own militia up and resist the federal forces, which they see as being ethnically driven by the Oromo people. As a result, they've inflicted huge damage on the Ethiopian National Defense Force and the Oromo Liberation Front. Many of the government forces are defecting to what the Amhara had initially called their Fano group, which is their militia group. But now what's happening is that these Fano groups have been formed not only in Amhara area, but also in the Afar Muslim area, in Gambela State, in the southern regions, and other areas of Ethiopia. So basically, the Fano movement is taking on the guise of being an Ethiopian protest to an ethnic government, because the government of Dr. Abiy is being increasingly seen as ethnically oriented toward creating an Oromo superstate. And this is exactly the opposite of what the Ethiopians want. They want a federal geographic divide, not a federal ethnic divide among the people. They want a federation, but they don't want it to be based around ethnic groups, but rather around historical regions, which was the case under the emperor until 1974. So the Fano people are basically calling for the restoration of the last constitution, which Haile Selassie was bringing in 1973-74 when the coup occurred against him, and saying that this was the only thing which has any legitimacy in modernizing Ethiopia, bringing it back towards an elected parliamentary democracy with a constitutional monarchy to stabilize and represent the values of the nation. And so this is a war which is not going to go away soon. Prime Minister Abiy does seem to have a messianic view of his role in creating the new Ethiopia, but it's one which most Ethiopians no longer share, because they say, no, he's gone back to the old ethnic warfare of the communists over the past 40 years.
Quickly to Venezuela. The conflict is about putting the elbow in the side of the tiny Guyana. We're told over these last days, a meeting between Ali, the president of tiny Guyana, and the dictator, the Caudillo, the man who is not recognized as a legitimate president, Maduro, met and shook hands. There was a photograph on Reuters. But you write that this has long-term implications for Russia, China, and AUKUS. How so?
Well, Russia, China, and Iran all have a vested interest in getting this going as a major war, which would drag Western forces away from the Middle East and away from the Indo-Pacific. And so they have been pushing Venezuela to strike out against Guyana over this long-standing border disagreement, which goes back to about 1840, but was resolved in 1899 with a treaty between Guyana and Venezuela signed in 1899. And a few years later, the Venezuelans shook hands and agreed that that was going to be the defined border. But this new border, or the defined border, shall we say, includes a huge strip of land, which basically is between Venezuela and the rump of Guyana. And this land has a seacoast. And off that seacoast, the largest oil deposits probably seen this century have been discovered. And they are Guyana's deposits. And in 2020, for example, Guyana's gross domestic product was $5.4 billion. And in 2022, 2 years later, it was $15.36 billion. And it's going up dramatically because this is a massive oil find. Now, Venezuela itself has massive oil deposits of a heavier crude oil, but they've squandered that and it's been unproductive. But now they see that their tiny neighbor is going to be immensely richer and more successful. So they've restaked their territorial claim. And Nicolas Maduro had a referendum in Venezuela in which he said most of the Venezuelans supported the reality that this territory was in fact really belonging to Venezuela and not to Guyana. Well, the reality is that this goes against all of the critical legal judgments of the past. And the Guyanese went to the International Court of Justice in The Hague, which is adjudicating the case again now to review it. President Ali has said that he will stick by the ICJ's ruling. And President Maduro said they don't even recognize the ICJ, so that's null and void. Now, President Ali of Guyana called in the U.S., and the U.S. Southern Command has been, in the last couple of years, exercising extensively with the Guyana Defense Force, which is only a 5,000-man force against 60,000 to 100,000 Venezuelans. Venezuelans. But the British are also interested because Guyana is a Commonwealth country, and the officers in the Guyana Defence Force are trained at Sandhurst Military Academy in Britain.
We have 30 seconds, Gregory. I want to know a timeline on this. Can you see Maduro moving sometime in these next months, or is he going to bide his time?
He has to do something pretty quickly because he's facing a big election early in 2024, and he wants to grandstand for that. And that's going to take it to the brink of conflict and maybe over into the into real conflict.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs for the King Charles Report. We'll be back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.